Today's daf is daf pei, and we're holding right on the top at the beginning of the Halakha Mishnah. So prepare yourself for some fancy bee raising today, and some other fascinating agricultural prospects. Halokeach perot shovach michavero. Now we're going to be talking over here. It's interesting, in some way it's a continuation of the issues of Davar Shelo Balei Olam that we talked about earlier. Here we're taking for granted that there are ways to sell forthcoming peirot. Now, we had contrasted yesterday at length the difference between peirot that come from the actual gidulim. We were talking about hegdash. So we had gidulim of a sada, gidulim of a tree, and we had to figure out how we would be able to do that in terms of Davar Shelo Balei Olam. Over here, we're taking for granted that there's a standard transaction by which it is possible to buy the production of things which are not considered to be the equivalent of an actual tree. For instance, I mean, suppose you're buying the product of a shovach, which is a holder for birds, a dovka. I mean, obviously, those birds haven't arrived yet. It's not as if they're naturally programmed to grow there. So, nonetheless, the way most Rishonim understand it is the transaction is viewed as a right to the actual shovach, which allows you to take certain parts of it left. The same way you could sell a piece of a right to a piece of a lot for a tree, or you could sell a tree for its payros and so on. So here too, most understand that the way that this works is that technically you're buying a right to the shovach to take a certain number of birds. So when you're giving over the perot of a season, of your shovach, it's clear from the transaction that you intend to keep the shovach per se for yourself. You said in Farish, perot shovach. Now the problem is that what we're going to discuss here are entities that are part of a living ecosystem, and therefore you can't separate completely the product from the system that creates the product, because they're part of the system. So if I would literally take out all of the production of a shovach, then I've left him behind a useless thing, because there's no way to repopulate that shovach naturally. If I leave a certain number of breeding population in the shovach, which is clearly what he meant to maintain for himself, because he wants the shovach, he's only selling the perot of the shovach, so then I've left behind the shovach. Then the same thing is true with bees. If I destroy the hive, I've left him nothing. I mean, certainly when a person tells me that he's selling peirot kaveret, I want to sell you the peirot, and peirot is understood, by the way, unless you mention specifically that you want honey, the peirot of a kaveret are, for beekeepers, the bees, not the honey. So in other words, the peirot of a kaveret are the swarms that will be produced by this kaveret. Now there too, it's part of the whole development of beekeeping, that you have to learn how to keep your hive alive and not start over again. Primitive beekeeping, there was no such thing, actually. So in other words, bee gatherers, there were always honey gatherers, they would destroy the hive. You know, so they still do this in many primitive places. They go around with smoke, and they'll go and collect the thing, and I mean, there's 8,000-year-old cave paintings about that kind of stuff, of people smoking out bees. It's still done in South America and so on. I mean, in primitive societies, they don't keep the bees. They destroy the bees. So you go up there, you smoke the thing, you smash it to bits, and then you strain the honey out, and now you go and find another one, a disaster. Because basically, you're simply, it's slash and burn. So the earliest, amazingly, the earliest beekeeping that was discovered in the world was Professor Mazar discovered in Rehov a beekeeping factory, 100 hives in a row, in perfect condition, artificial hives, which are the kaveret that the Mishnah talks about, where they had worked out the way to keep the hives alive from year to year. In modern terms, they use the movable rack hives. They're able to move around the honeycombs inside the hive, which is a tremendous improvement, because as you move it out of the way, you can make sure that they don't start laying eggs in the honey. They move on to the next comb. That way you keep that honey clean and so on. Plus, you always leave enough behind, which the Mishnah is going to be talking about. You have to leave back 2 honeycombs for the bees to survive the winter, and then they'll start reproducing again. So there, too, obviously, if you take out all of the swarms, there's not going to be anything left. So you need to stop at one point. So how much do you leave behind and how much do you take? And we have a number of examples of these kind of things. Now, the first two are literally systems. We have an interconnection between the product and the product matrix. The last two are examples where it's a little bit easier to understand. You're talking about, the Mishnah only, but in the Braita we'll extend it, where you're talking about taking lumber off of a tree. Obviously, you need the tree now to continue to be able to produce lumber. So we spoke about different types of tree. The Mishnah is going to talk about Zeitim as an example, but we've already seen Sadan HaShikma and so on. So now, let's take a look in the Mishnah and see what the accepted rulings are for such cases. You buy the Perot Shovach of a year from your friend. You've got to leave behind enough to keep that Shovach going until he gets the next year's production. What does that require? Well, Mafriar Brecha Rishona, you have to allow the first brood to just fly around. You cannot take it out. And actually, the doves will reproduce once a month. They'll have a male and female once a month, every single month, 11 months out of the year. And what happens is they mature within 3 months. Now the second generation starts reproducing on the same schedule, and so on. If they're not happy with the company they're keeping, they leave. And so, basically, we need to understand how do these dovey-dovey love doves, what makes them happy? So we're going to see it very much as like human kind of happiness relationships that keep them around. But you got to leave kids in there or else the mother's going to fly away. I mean, the husband's not enough to keep her around, you know. So she's going to take off, as we know. So there got to be kids. Now the problem is, we're going to see, but the kids grow up very quickly, you know. So there it's 3 months. By us, it's 30 years, same thing. You know? The empty nest, exactly. So once there's an empty nest, the mother's also going to fly off. So you got to leave now something for the next generation to keep them around, or they're going to fly away, which will cause the previous generation to fly away. So basically, what are you going to do? So the Mishnah only addresses the first generation. We're going to see what happens in the Braita about the rest. But you've got to leave the first brood to keep the mother around. If you're going to be selling the perot of a kaveret, which means the bees, then you're allowed to take three swarms, notar shlosha nechilim, and then misares. Now, the partial meaning is that somehow or other you sterilize the bees, that's what it seems to be meaning, so that you stop them from reproducing further so that they won't wreck the honey that's inside currently. They won't consume that by laying larvae in it and having them grow. But we'll see that that's by no means a clear explanation of the Mishnah. If you buy the chalot of the dvash instead of the bees, there you have another problem. You can't take out all the dvash because the dvash is also part of an ecosystem. If you don't leave behind a certain number of honeycombs, then the bees won't survive the winter. So you have to leave behind shtei chalot for the hive. If you buy the rights to cut olive wood off of an olive tree, zeitim lakut, you need to leave shtei grufiot. Shtei grufiot are the two strong lowest branches on the tree so that the tree can regenerate. So this is all about regeneration. All of the inyonim here, I need to be able to regenerate the doves, regenerate the hives, and regenerate the trees. So getting now to the first question, which is the selling of a brecha, of a shovach. You have to leave the first brecha. The problem is, says the Braita, Vatanya brecha rishana ushnia. Here it says you have to leave the first two broods. Amar Rav Kana, you're missing the point. It doesn't mean the first two sets of children from the first two reproducing birds. It means lokash hala haleima. When it says now it adds a second one, it means you add the second one for the first generation that you had left behind. Because what's going to keep those first generation birds there if you're going to take their children? And if they leave, so now who's going to keep the mother company? Then the mother will leave. So now you're left again without a real reproducing shovach, which is useless to the seller. Says, now wait. The mother was perfectly happy. The ima maishna ima de mitstavta abartava azuga. The mother was perfectly happy having her husband around as long as she had her daughter around. I mean, so now she's got enough company to keep her at home. So then that's what we left behind, the shafkiranla. So why can't the second generation, the daughter, be happy with having her parents at home? Come on, man. That's because ima abrata mitstafta. Abrata ima lo mitstafta. The mother is very happy with having the kid in the house. The kid sure ain't happy having a mother in the house. So memela, the daughter is going to fly away if she doesn't have any reason to stay at home. The only reason she's going to stay at home is because she's already got kids at home. So the question is, does this go on ad infinitum? Do we have to leave over? So according to Tosis, yes. The bride is taking for granted. Once it tells you the facts of life, you're going to understand that every generation works the same way. The Rashbam, however, no, but you only need one pair. There's 100 pairs that are being produced by each generation. Each generation requires one pair. One pair to keep it, to keep their reproducing couple there. The thing is, I mean, these things geometrically reproduce, and they're reproducing every month. And then they start reproducing next generation every 3 months. So it doesn't take long to have yourself a full shovach. The Rashbam, however, learns that there's such a thing as an estate. Once you get an estate, nobody leaves. I mean, they don't, you know. So once you got already these first three generations there, nobody's going to leave. You're sort of stuck there forever. So Mamela, this only really goes on to deal with the first birds, the way the pashtus of the bride did. A lot of human parallels here. Now let's move on to the Perot Kaveret. Of course, Barnea wasn't here when we discussed Professor Mazar's findings, but I'll mention it once again. You know. Tell us. It's Barnea's neighborhood.
3,000-year-old.
Kaveret? 100.
Where? Tel Rehov is near Beit Shan. It's where they found, from a later time period, the mosaic of the Brides of Chum, because you would need to be going to Eber Yair, the north, south, etc. It's a border.
Excellent. There you go.
The 10th century, and the size of the buildings, it's another indication, yes, there was a Malchus of David and Shlomo. When did they find this? Two summers ago.
Excellent. All right, so I didn't have to tell Rabbanaya. He could have told us.
That's
something else. Yeah, it's not Nagar. All right, so here indeed, the Mishnah reflects the widespread beekeeping. So beekeeping is built around the idea of keeping behind a living hive, getting it to produce additional hives and produce honey, without destroying the honey, without destroying the hive. Now that requires a lot of fine-tuning, which has taken many, many generations of beekeepers to work out. But basically what happens is that that hives swarm. Now it's not clear why, because they'll swarm even if they don't need to swarm. But what happens is at a certain point, it's time to move on. And so the bee goes, the old bee leaves together with an entire swarm of worker bees, take up to 60% of the hive with her. And now there's an opportunity for new blood to come and take over. And this happens time after time. It can happen 5 or 6 times in a season. The Rashbam talks about in Greece, he heard it happens even more. I don't know about it, but what I looked around to find, I didn't find more than 5 or 6 times in a season. But Lamaisa, as each swarm leaves, it leaves behind a weakened hive. So it's all very good the first 3 times. More than 3 times, you're already getting swarms that are not really as viable as the initial swarms. So therefore, the mocher has a right to stop this from going on too long because his hive will be weak at the point where its survival is at stake. So that's the portion of meaning of the Mishnah. You only have a right to take the first 3 swarms, which are remarkable how that's done. I mean, you know, these bees, basically, they're in a tremendous rush. The times that bees are least dangerous is when they're swarming, when everybody's terrified of them, because they look like they're coming to kill. But the truth is they only have a little bit of fuel in their tanks, because they only have what they can take with them. So they only have a few hours, really, in which they can find a hive or they're dead. So they don't have time to attack people or do anything. They're just simply looking to live. So what they do is they settle down on something nearby. They send out approximately 50 scouts scout around the area, and if a really good place is found to build a hive or a hole that exists now that they can go into, they all move on. When the scouts come back, they tell them exactly where it is, and they move on to that place. During the time when they're waiting to find the place, that's when a beekeeper will be able to get the swarm, because what he does is sprays them with sugar, sugar water, and he puts a sheet down under them. And then the sugar, that really like blows them away. It makes them drunk. And you shake the thing, and they fall into the sheet. You close the sheet, and you leave just the hole into the next kaveret. When they spot the hole, they go walking into the hole very docilely. And they take up residence there, and that's it. So now you're set. Okay. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. That's a very common way. But anyway, that's how you'll capture the nechil. So the nechil is really very vulnerable. And that's what you're buying. Exactly. Not left. That's very close to home. So, memela, this is what you've sold. You've sold the right to collect those nechilim. So, pirot kaveret dotel shlosha nechilim u'misareis. Now, the assumption being misareis is to stop the bees from reproducing. It means literally to sterilize them. And that way, you won't wreck the hive for the next year. And they're going to stop all of the swarming and so on. Bamemisar san. How do you do that? I mean, it's a little difficult to operate on little bees, you know. Omer evin omer shmuel. Well, what you do is you give them chardal. Now, how exactly does chardal misareis bees? It's not that the chardal is misareis bees, but honey is to love what chardal is to non-love. So basically, when they've got this taste of chardal in their mouth, they don't want to make love. Instead, they want to make honey because they need to, there's this burning up their mouths. You see, this is how it works. So it's not the chardal is masar san. It's alamitok shepiem chad. As long as they eat the devash, then they don't produce. So mamela, at a certain point, now by the time winter comes around, they're docile. There's enough left for them to survive, and then they'll go on to the next generation. Rabbi Yochanan says, we cut out this. Sirus has nothing to do with sterilizing bees, for heaven's sakes. Sirus has a completely different meaning. Like, sareset akrova darsheo. It doesn't mean to castrate the posik, it means to alternate the meaning by bringing the bottom part up to the top and so on. That's what it means over here. It means no tel shloshan nechilim besirus. It means you don't take the first three, you take every other one. So let's say you, the buyer, has a right to 1, 3, and 5, and the seller has the right to 2, 4, and 6. That's what it's saying. Actually, the Braita says it a little differently. You have a right to that because, you see, Rabbi Yochanan's understanding is Notel shlosha nechilim u'misareis. Not take the first three and then start being misareis, but rather take the first three. How? By being misareis. So you take 3 out of 6. But the way the Braita understand it is no. Notel shlosha. You take the first three nechilim straight. Bezeacherzeh. It's mikan ve'elech. You're misareis by being notel achat u'miniach achat. Yes. Each hive can swarm many times. But we don't want it to swarm too much because it weakens it. No. You can only do one swarm at a time, and then you need to wait until the new queen is laying, and there's sufficient bees there to start another swarm. So this is some type of biological program. Nobody knows exactly what triggers swarming. Obviously, if you overcrowd a hive, then it swarms. It's triggered by overcrowding. But even if it's not overcrowded, by the second year, it swarms by itself. As a matter of fact, it's one of the biggest problems is preventing, for a beekeeper to prevent a hive from swarming. Because then they run away, basically. Now they've got to chase them. Plus, he weakens what's behind. So there's all kinds of tricks to prevent swarming. That's one of the big chokhmas of beekeeping. But hives are programmed to swarm for some reason. I mean, you can understand the reason, you know. It's migdal bavel, basically. And that's the idea. Enough food, salt, and ekolar. It's built into the bees. Om Rav Kana. So we say, next piece of the Mishnah was?
Does the queen take off with this one?
Yeah. There's new queens that are prepared. It's all part of the hormonal control of the hive.
They know it's there, they can take
yeah, off. Again, you have to remember that for all to us, it's very funny because we're so used to living individual lives. A hive is the equivalent of a person, not of a lot of people.
Those are the cells.
So, yeah. So one hive is basically a person who's moving out of the house to reproduce. It's not. So all of the hormonal structure that affects the cells in your body that allows you to do that and creates reproductive cells and so on and so forth is what happens to the hive. Except in a hive, it strikes us being very weird because we can actually see the cells, so to speak. But that's really the way to look at it. So the kids are leaving the house. Very similar to the shovach that we had before. The next case is that if you're buying the honey, so you have to leave behind two honeycomb, honeycomb. Omer of Kahana. So the dvash bekaveret, eno yotze midei ma'achal olam. So we bring in an issue over here that has only a tangential bearing on what we've been discussing. And it's interesting because it's really the second time that we've been discussing the din of a kaveret, the gavituma, strangely enough, in all places in Baba Basra. That also gave before of the question of the Yarot HaDvash. We're going to get back into it again. So here the Shaila is, according to Rav Kahana, there is no way for honey inside of a kaveret to not be makabel tuma. Meaning, there is no way that you can prevent by not being mechashev on it, that it's royal achila. It doesn't require machshava. It is defined as a human food right up front. Once it's defined that way, milachatchila, if afterwards something happens to it, let's say it gets dirty or so on and so forth, that's going to take off the shaykhus to being a ma'achal. Es the Gemara. So amaka shavala boy ma'achshava. So as Rav Kahana is saying, that dvash in a kaveret does not require anybody to think, okay, I want to use this as a food. It's a food. Es the Gemara from a bright, a mitzvah. You understand, of course, where we're going. Because if we're going to find that there's any contradiction to the dinim of tuma, of dvash in general, we now have an opening. Because if we've decided that there are two chalot dvash, which by definition need to be the food of the bees and not the food of people, because otherwise the kaveret is doomed, so we now know that we're going to, here's a test case for whether indeed it is true that those two chalot are not considered to be ma'achal adam. So obviously this is the best place to look. This is what you would have done on your own, right? It's not a strange tangent. So now we find in our braita that says dvash b'kaveret eino locha v'lo mashke. If you leave dvash in the kaveret, it does not have a din of being makabotum at all. Not like a mashke, which requires a revias, and in order to be matami acherim, actually old machlokas rashi tosfos, gotta be kabbalas tum and matami acherim, or not like an ocha, which is a kebetza, which is less than the revias. So mashke revias. But in any event, neither tuma. I'd explain that exactly the opposite of what Rav Kahana says. It's always makabel tuma, not machshava. Over here it's saying it's bechlal not makabel tuma. Says Abai, your answer is right in front of your nose. Lo tzricha lo tan shtei chalot. Obviously, if we're talking about something that is in a kaveret that is not going to be makabel tuma, it's because it's not miyuchad l'machal adam. What is that? Those two chalot that were left behind that you have to be careful not to eat cannot be qualified here as kabbalas tumas ma'achal adam, because we need them for the bees. Rava Amar, Rava says, very difficult to believe that a brayta that says stam, that is lo ocha v'lo mashka, is referring to two chalot specifically at the end of the season. It says dvash b'kaveret. I don't accept that. Therefore, I hold that it's not really a kashrut of Kahana, but for another reason. It's not a kashrut of Kahana because there's an old machlokas between Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachamim. And over here, we're going, I'll leave it the shita of Rebbe Eliezer, that all of the dvash in the kaveret is not makabel tuma, not because it has anything to do with ma'achal adam, but because, as we saw before, the remarkable shita of Rebbe Eliezer is that a kaveret with its dvash is weirdly enough considered to be mechubel lekarka, even if it isn't mechubel lekarka. That it's a gzeiras hakosev, that for all intents and purposes, a kaveret is a tree, a growing tree. So we view that sense of an ecosystem as actually being part of the earth. It's a whole new concept. We're used to thinking that mechubel means literally mechubel. Here we're talking about the life phases are part of the functioning of the earth, and therefore it's mechubel lekarka. And we learn that out from a pasuk, as you recall, which we'll get back to again with the story of Yonatan and Shaul with the Yarat Advash. Ditznan. The Mishnah says, Kaveret Devorim. Rabbi Eliezer Mer Harehi Kikarka. So this was, again, we had this before. Here we're going to mention it again. Here it's talking about, the Mishnah is talking about in the context of Shemitah. Why is it important to determine whether it has been a karka? Like, I'd be prusbal. Because we only made a takana of writing a prusbal that should be considered to be already collected by a Beit Din, where it's a standard loan. A standard loan is always made against security that's collectible from, which is karka. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, well, if a guy owns a kaveret, he owns karka. And therefore, kotvin ala prusbal, and of course the other implications are, that since it's a b'chubel karka, It's ena mekabela tuma bimkoma. It will not be mekabel tuma. Now, the word bimkoma was a big problem, which we discussed earlier, because if it's mechubel karka, there's no such thing as bimkoma. You're saying wherever it is, it's viewed as mechubel karka. It's a whole question. We're showing what bimkoma means, whether it's talking about that there's a gzera de rabbanan that it's considered to be a mekabel tuma once you start treating it as a kli and you move it around. Good. That's one way of learning. We'll see later on this case where the honey spills, it's longer than kaveret, in which case it's not considered to be a bakarka. Okay, but that's really not important for us to understand what our sukkah is about. And furthermore, you'd even be chayav a chatas b'niraisa if you take out honey on Shabbos. Even those things on bakarka, astounding. And we'll see later on that it's a gzeres hakos. V'chachamim omrim. Nonsense. There's a reversal here for some reason. In the Mishnah, it's ena kakar, because it should be the enkov in alei ha'pruzbo. And explains Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, my time at Rabbi Yezer, what exactly is a Yarat Advash? What does it make sense? What do you mean a forest of honey? I mean a forest of honey. When you're looking at beehives, even if they're artificial, you're looking at trees. A different type of forest. Mate. Okay, so we have two different approaches. How does Rav Kahana consistent with the Braita? Either he's consistent according to Abaya because everybody agrees that there's certain dvash that is not ma'achal adam, because we need it for the bees. Or, it's talking about all dvash, and the reason it's not ma'achal tum has nothing to do with who it's needed for. It's simply because nothing that's b'chubel karka is b'kabel tuma. Nobody's going to argue as to whether an apple is food, but if it's b'chubel karka, it's not b'kabel tuma. Well, the honey and it's covered, it's not b'kabel tuma. I'll leave it to Eliezer. Meitzvah. Further question on whether Abai is right or Arova is right. How do you understand this? Dvash azav mikavarta. If you have honey that has leaked out of the hive, Eino lo ocha velo mashi. Now that's crazy. How could that possibly be? So according to Abaye, who says that it's talking about the last two chalot, fine, this is fine. So Bishon Abaye, it's necha. This was never defined as ma'achal adam. So it doesn't become ma'achal adam just because it's now, it's leaked out. If somebody would define it, maybe it would at that point become ma'achal. But according to Rava, the whole issue is that it's considered to be b'chur l'karka. Nobody's going to say that it's b'chur l'karka if it's now lying now on the ground and it's not in its kaveret. So how's Rava going to explain this? Omer of Zvid, it's talking about, according to Rava, where it leaked out onto something that is disgusting. So therefore, since at the time it was b'chur l'karka, it was not considered to be earthly. Now that it's leaked out into this chamber pot, nobody's going to eat it. So mamela, there's no, that's all it's saying. But if it had leaked out directly, say nothing. It would have been considered to be. See, once something is an eichlin, it's not going to lose its din of kabbalah tuma because it's in a dirty kli.
How come it didn't throw the eichlin right away?
Because it leaked directly onto this thing. The kaveret was on in a chamber pot and it leaked directly into the toilet. See, what are you going to say? That it's considered to be food. Nobody's going to eat it. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, even that honey doesn't really get dirty. I mean, you could always, you leave a layer of honey, you know, and take the rest. So why is that a problem? You'd have to say, it was Zava Gabe Kaskasi. It got mixed up with splinters, but now it's not really, what are you going to do with it? You can't, I mean, try picking out splinters from the wash. I mean, that's what it's talking about. So who's going to use it then? Okay, but I mean, the principle is the same. The moment in which it was already not Mechor, but the character was already ruined from being ma'achal adam. So that can work out both according to Abaya and according to Rava. But how about this? Meitzvah. Dvash b'kavarto inu lo ocha v'lo mashke. But, chishev alav l'achil ha'metam b'tum as earthling, lo mashke b'tam b'tum as mashke. According to Abaya, that's fine. Abaya said, the reason that it's not considered to be earthling is because it's miyuchat for the bees. Therefore, if chishev alav l'achil, if you decided in your mind that you want it to be eaten, so then it'll be food. If you want to use it in its liquid state, so then it'll be liquid. Oh, that makes sense. I mean, you could change your mind about leaving it for the bees. Again, everything is yored today to matam b'makshavah. Even kalim's over here, certainly making a maifel. But according to Rava, the problem is it's b'chur l'karka. How could you possibly have a makshava to turn something into eichlin if it's mekorba lekarka? So this proves that it's not about Rebbe Eliezer. It's about the Shtei Chalot. Amlecha Rava, you're reading it wrong. Tritz hachi. Chishev alav la'achila eno metami tumas ochlin. Lamashkin eno metami tumas mashkin. Which Tosfos explains, not that he's changing the girsa. He's saying, the Braisa is saying like this. Dvash bekavarto eno lo ochlo v'lo mashka. Insofar as to say that if chishev alav la'achila should be metami tumas ochlin, or to be chishev alav mashkin should be metami tumas mashkin, it will not be. Because it's eno lo ochlo v'lo mashkin, and will not help to have a makshava. So if anything, it's coming to tell me, but dafka not like a bayim. It's coming to tell me what I'm saying. Once it's in the kaveret, there's no way, with all the makshava in the world, to turn a makubal karka into a davar makabal tuma. That's all that it's saying. Perfectly reasonable. Okay. That works. Tani kavati to Rav Kahana. In fact, the bright that says, exactly what Rav Kahana says, dvat bekavarto metami tumat ochlin shelo b'makshava. And that was the main point of Rav Kahana. Next case that we had in the Mishnah was zeitim. So if you're buying wood, olive wood, you have to be near shtei grufiyot. Tanu rabban. Alokefi lan mechaveiro lakutz. You're buying the rights to cut lumber from a tree that is growing in somebody else's field. Now this is very common for Christmas trees. And the question is, can you cut that tree all the way down at the ground? Or do you have to leave enough for it to regrow? Well, we're going to be discussing Christmas trees in a moment, as you will see. So if you're talking about now a tree for lumber, so then you have to keep one tefach from the ground to be continuing the trunk's life, because it can regenerate from a one tefach high stump, and then you can be kotzeitz. If we're dealing with a sycamore, which is a bitula, so it's never been cut before, and the sycamore was the main source of lumber, so then you need to leave three tefach. If it's already been cut, now it's got a very powerful, thick stump, now you only need to leave two tefach. If you're cutting things like kanim, gifanim, which are thin, you go up to the first knot in the wood, and you cut above it, and it will grow out from that knot, like a rose bush. So, binapakak velamala. If you're talking about dikalim, you're talking about palm trees, or you're talking about arazim, which is talking about now Christmas trees, we'll see, talking about more than that, then you could be chofer misharish. You can dig the tree out from the ground, because, as we know, Esav never regrows. That's it. You cut him down, he's done. That's Ine, that Yaakov Aminu says to him, right? So you got one chance. Basically, nitmale satan, there's no sheva yipol tzadik pekam. So therefore, if you're talking about Arazim, you cut it down, it's never going to grow back. The problem is tzadik etam yifrat, and here the same thing is true about a deco, but we'll ignore that. So there are certain kind of trees that if you cut them down, they don't regrow, and that includes, of all interesting things, the Tamar and the Erez. Boy, that's weird. Okay, now, says the Gemara, you just said that you need three tvachim on a betulat ha-shikma. That is not true. And I can prove that from a Mishnah in Shviyas. Betulat ha-shikma shlosha tvachim ba'ina, v'ramini, ein kotzetzin betulat ha-shikma b'shviyit. Now, of course, the general rule is during Shvita, you're not allowed to prune trees. That means prune trees, not prune trees. So you're not allowed to prune trees if that's beneficial for the tree. But you're allowed to cut wood from a tree if it's not beneficial for the tree. We saw before there's ways to tell. If you're talking about branches, you cut all the branches on one side, that's not good for the tree. So over there it's clear you want to clear the way or whatever it is. Now, here you're cutting kitesates, the Elon, but there's a way to be kitesates to encourage it to regrow. And that's the regeneration of our Mishnah here. Should be comparable to the regeneration in Shemitah. If I cut in a way which is going to regenerate, so then it's also because it's avodat ilan, and it says karma chalot izmar. So this is included in the issur of karma chalot izmar, which really is a machlokas rishonim, whether karma chalot izmar is a din on every tree or whether it's a din in a karen. But even if it's not a din on all trees like the Rashbam holds, and it's a din only in a karen, like many of the rishonim hold, like the Rash, but there's certainly the rabbanan that answers all avodat ilan, even on things that are not really directly karen. So you're not allowed to. Because it's b'tulat shikma in a way that allows it to regenerate. Now, says Rabbi Yehuda, well, it depends. If you do it in a way which is kedarko, which encourages it to grow, so then it's avodat hakerem and it's aser. The thing to do is, I'll tell you, You got to cut it in a way that's going to make certain that you're not encouraging it to regrow. So you have to cut it either from 10 tefachim and up, which is bad for it, or, so you could be magbiah asarat tefachim v'kotzeitz, or you could go main me'ima aretz. You can cut it down on ground level. Uh-huh. And what do you see? That only ground level is a problem, but it's above ground level. One tefach should be fine, because the one tefach is usher and shmita. So if it's usher and shmita, so it should be mutter and mechira. It should be an exact mirror image of one sugya to the other. So you see from your dafka me'ima aretz to the kashi. But if it would be anything else, oh, yidag malila. Amar Abaye, that's not true. Because you may have a gray area in between. Remember that the point over here is to be machmir in two different directions. If you're talking about Shemitah, you have to be machmir on the Isser of Avodah B'Shemitah. So you have to do something that's going to vanai, make it not regrow. But if you're talking about the din of mechira, you have to leave for the mocher something that will vadai make it regrow. Therefore, the standards are different. The area between the karka and the asarat tvachim is not a definite destruction of the ilan, right? But it's not going to definitely allow it to regrow either. So you can't rely on that area. That's a gray area, and it's not usable not for shmita because it might regrow. It might sometimes it encourages it to regrow. And it's not enough for you to leave a mocher, because the mocher says, look, you didn't leave me enough to be sure that I've got a tree to regrow. So how can you bring a raya from there? Therefore, says Abaye, look, shloisha tvachim is definitely ma'ala. That's all that we're saying over here. And you have to do what's definite. Me'ima aretz, vis-a-vis shmita, is vada kosher. That definitely will make it not regrow. So maybe you can rely on it that you're not doing avodah se'ilah. The area in between, I don't know. You can't be sure of its impact. Mamela Baishvias. You have to do Avdina Mita Devade Kashila. You have to do something that is definitely going to hurt it, not going to encourage it. Gabi Mekachumemkar, you have to do something that's Vada going to encourage it to regenerate and not possibly damage it. So there you need to choose Avdina Mita Devade Malila. Okay. Next case. Ba'arazim, we talked about Dikalim and Arazim. If the guy sells it for wood, it's not expected to regrow. So therefore, you have a right to take that tree right out of the ground. You're choifer and b'sharesh. The fisha ain't gizan machlif. Ask the Gemara, how can you say that the erez is not machlif? It happens to be that those two trees are exactly the trees that tzaddikim are compared to. Right? They're erez balabanon, and they're tzaddika tamar. So there's got to be a reason for us to compare dafka to the two trees that we're listing here in the Mishnah. Huh? What's that all about? Does it not say Vardarish Rabkhir Bar Luliani? My dikhiv tzadika tamar yifrach keres balvanon yizke? Im ne'emar tamar, lama ne'emar eres? Im ne'emar eres, lama ne'emar tamar? I mean, it's such a totally different imagery that it seems mad. I mean, how do you compare something to a palm tree on the one hand and to a fir tree on the other hand? I mean, they look totally different. They grow in totally different ways. They're totally different environments. It's a crazy pasuk. Must be like this. Because ilu nemar erez, velo nemar tamar, I would say, an erez doesn't make peirot. You know, so you'll say a tzaddik exists for himself. He doesn't make peirot in the world, or he doesn't make peirot for himself in olam haba. He gets all of his schar in olam hazeh, whatever. Kach nemar tamar. Tamar is a fruit producing tree par excellence. On the other hand, im nemar tamar, velo nemar erez, here's where it comes directly to our sugya. Hayiti omer, the tamar is a very sensitive tree. So if it's cut down, en gizo machlif, so you would think that a tzaddik, once he's cut down, av tzaddik, en gizo machlif, either in the sense that if he dies, his children will not take over his aveda, or if something happens to destroy him, he won't be able to rebuild himself. We know sheva yipot tzaddik v'kam. Lekach ne'amar erez. How can you say that if you sell an erez, you're allowed to tear it out because there's no way for it to regrow? If the whole point of an erez is that it's a model of something that regrows, that's a little bit crazy. You make a mistake in thinking that an erez is an easily identifiable tree. It happens to be. There are 10 different arazim, and they're not even all trees. Some of them are coral, as we've spoken about in the past, which people thought were trees. They thought there were trees growing in the sea. It's a type of erez, because they're the same way a whale as a fish. As we refer to things in terms of what they what their taxonomy is and what their environment is. So therefore, talk about Sharmine Arasim. Kid Rabba Baravuna. The Omar Rabba Baravuna, Amri Bey Rav, discussed this many times before. There are 10 different type of Arasim. Shenema. Etain Bamidbar Erez. Shita, Hadas, Echamen, Asim Barava, Barosh, Tidhar, and Ta'ashur. All of these things are Erez. So what is the Erez is what we call the Arza. The Shita is the Tornita. A pine tree. Adas is an asa, which is adasim. Eight shemen is a farsam, it's a balsam tree. Barosh is barati, tidar shagar, we call it baksam. Ta'ashur, shurbina. So one of the others, wait a minute, if I count right, that's seven. You said ten. Anishiva habi. Well, kedr of Dimi Omar, but there's also alonim and almonim and almogim. The alonim are butni. Actually, there should be bluti. There's different girsa, which is oak. Because we refer to alon as laurel. We refer to alon as oak.
We refer to it as oak.
As oak, which means that it would be bluti, not butni. So it's a different. So alonim would be bluti, and almonim are butni, and almogim are kasita, which is coral. So Rav Bam says is a tree that grows in the yam. It's very expensive. Well, that sure doesn't grow back. Yes, no. So ikiri amri is something. It's aronim and armonim. The chestnut trees are even considered to be a type of erez.
Do we know it's supposed to come down?
No. No. It seems to have something to do with a shape, at least. Sort of they're furry. One of the fur does spread out. And armonim are gulbi, and almodim are kasita. The only reason that I know the alon is because I have a little alon grandson. So his sister likes to pick up the alon nuts. So I got all excited about the birth of her brother. She wasn't too happy. So she would pick up alon nuts on her way to Gan and pick up the little kippah off of the nut to give to her brother. As they grow with little, some of the oaks have a very clear cut kippah around the, what do they call it? The oak? The acorns. The acorn has a top. Pull off the top, it looks like a
kippah.
That's otherwise, believe me. I'm out of bucky.
That's the modern word for coral is almogim.
Almogim, yeah. Halokeach perot shavach mechavero. Halokeach perot shavach mechavero mafriach brecha rishona. Perot gaver et notel shlosha nechilim umesarets. Chalot dvash meniach shte chalot. Zeitin lakutz meniach shte grufiot. Vatanya brecha rishona ushnia. Amrefkan alokasha Allah ala ima. Umayishna ima debitztavta with abarta and azuga. And that's all that we need to be shafkina now. Why can't she get along also? Antit stavta ima. Viazuga de shafkina la. Ima abrata is mitstavta, but abrata ima is not mitstavta. Perot kavera del tel shloshade chinimu misares. Bema misarsan. On revino meshmo bechardal. Ami bema rava mishmed rubyaz rebechanina. Lo chardal misarsan, literally. And let me talk to PM chat, chazot vochlota tuf shanan. Rabbi Yochanan Omer Notel Shlosha Nechilim B'Sirus is what the Mishnah means. B'matnita Tana, no. Notel Shlosha Nechilim first B'Zachazeh, and then B'Sares B'Kan Ve'elev. Notel Achat, U'Miniach Achat. Chalot Dvash, Miniach Shtei Chalot, Omrev Kana. Dvash B'Kaveret, Eino Yotzi Midei Ma'achal Lo'olam. Alma Kasava, Lo Boi Machshava. Meitve dvash v'kaveret einu lo ochel v'lo mashke. Om Rabbaya, that's referring to otam shtei chalot. Rava says no. It's referring to all the dvash in the kaveret. And it's not because it's not roi lo adam, it's because it's Rabbi Eliezer, he who also it's b'chuba l'karka. Tetznan kaveret devorim. Rabbi Eliezer omer arei kekarka v'kotvin aleo pruzbol. Einu mekabela tuma v'mekoma harodu mimenu v'shabat chayv chatas. וחכמים אומרים אינו כקרקע ואין כותבין עליה פרוס בו ומקבל התומה במקומה והרודה ממנה בשבת פטור. אומר רבי אלעזר מיתיים את הרבי אליעזר תכתיב וידבול אותה ביערת הדבש. מה עניין יער אצל דבש? אלא לומר לך מה יער התולש ממנו בשבת חייב חטאת אף דבש הרודה ממנו בשבת חייב חטאת. מתווה Dvash hazav mi kabarato ino lo ocha v'lo mashka. It's a bishle mela bayi, okay? And neicha. El rova, it's not mechubar l'karka anymore, kasha. Omer v'zvit kagon shizov agabi klei ma'utz, or Rabbi Achbar Yaakov omer, kagon shizov agabi kaskasin, meitve. Dvash be kabarato ino lo ocha v'lo mashka, chishev alav l'achila matam itum es arichlin, l'mashkin matam itum es mashka. It's a bishle mela bayi, okay? Machshove helps. Necha, but according to Rava, it's mechubar l'karka, kasha. Amalacha Rava, what's the problem? Tritz hachi. Therefore, chishev alav l'achila, enu matami tumas ochlin. Therefore, chishev alav l'mashkin, enu matami tumas mashka, is what the bright is saying. Tani gabadid Rav Kana, dvash bekavarato, matami tumat ochlim, shelo b'machshava. Zeitim lakutz. Miniach shtei grofiot. Tana Rabbana. Halokeach ilan mechavero lakutz. Magbiya min hakarka tefach vekotzetz. If he bought a petulat hashikma, he needs three tvachim. If he bought a sadan hashikma, he needs two tvachim. Bekanim bekvanim, he needs the knot. Bina pekak v'lamad. V'kol barazim, chofer m'sharesh v'she'in gizan machlif. What? Petulat hashikma, shlosha tvachim b'imad. V'ramini, hein kotzitzim betulat hashikma b'shvit b'nei she'yavodah. Rabbi Yehuda omer, only kedar kotzasim. What he needs to do is magbiya asorat tvachim v'kotzeitz, or he goes all the way down to ground level, and mi'imaretz, and then he's kotzeitz. So you see, only mi'imaretz and akashi. But if it's above that, it's ma'alila. Om Rabbaya, no, who said it's ma'alila? Shlosha tvachim is definitely ma'alila. Mi'imaretz is definitely kashila. Now, in between, it's not clear. Mikan ve'elach, it's not makshi kashila la ve'luya malila. So, gabi shviyas avdina mina devare kashila. Gabi mekach mekach avdina mina devare malila. And you cannot rely on a gray area for either. Now, you say, b'dekalim ba'arazim chofer u'mesharesh v'she'en gizom achlif. How can you say that the erez is in gizom achlif if it's dafka the model of a gizom achlif? V'dar shubchir ba'luliani. My dechtiv tzadika tamar yifrach. Ki erez balvanon yizke, im ne'amar tamar, lama ne'amar erez. Ve'im ne'amar erez, lama ne'amar tamar. Ah, because im ne'amar tamar, ilu ne'amar erez, vol ne'amar tamar, yiti omar ma erez eno sepirot, av tzadik eno sepirot, kach ne'amar tamar. Im ne'amar tamar, volo ne'amar erez, yiti omar ma tamar, אין גזום החליף, אף צדיק אין גזום החליף, לקח נמר ארץ. נהלך אם הוא יזכירם בשאר מיני ארזים כרבא ברבונה, דיומר רבא ברבונה, אמרי ברב, עשרה מיני ארזים הם, שנמר אתן במדבר ארז, שיטה והדס, ואית שמן, עשים בערבה, בראש תדהר ותעשור יחדיו, so we darsh in each one of those, ארז, ארזה, שיטה, תורניטה, הדס, עשה, את שמן הפרסמה, Brosh Barti Tidar Shaga Tashur Shurvina. Yeah, that's seven. Ketur Vdimi Omar Osifa Aleim Alonim and the Almonim and the Amogim. Alonim being the Baluti, the Almonim being the Butni, and the Almonim being the Kasita. Igri Amri Aronim Armonim and Almogim. Aronim is the Ari, Armonim is Dulbi, and the Almonim is Kasita.